living in hiding in Europe today for fear of his life. Certainly Michael Rupert is living in hiding in Canada because they tried to kill him. That's Michael Rupert. We've interviewed him many times. We're not talking about imaginary things. We're talking about real things. We need your help to get the truth out. You go to our website. We have three, four tape sets on 9/11. We actually have a number of DVDs. We have the book, The Terror Timeline, and we have the book by Jesse Ventura, brand new book, American Conspiracies. I recommend Jesse Ventura's new book, The American Conspiracies. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to, of course, get our talk on the financial Armageddon, how they're intentionally destroying our nation. They're bringing it down financially, doing to us what they did to Zimbabwe. And believe me, our State Department brought the horror and suffering to Zimbabwe. You need to get our talk on the final secret to understand the spiritual forces at work. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Shamish. And we're going to get an update on what's really going on in Israel today. Hi, Barry. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thanks.
Well, tell us what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Well, let's start with the Jordan River.
All right, let's start with the Jordan River. You mean it's getting lower all the time, huh?
Oh, it's going to be dry by next year. A couple of Jordanian and Palestinian environmental scientists have released a report. Strangely, it was sponsored by the Israeli Friends of the Earth, Middle East, whatever that is, when Gideon Bromberg runs it, and they commission the report. And, you know, you can hire a Jordanian and Palestinian scientist, since anyone can see what's going on. I don't think you get a skewed report. Now, I've been watching water I'm a fisherman. First of all, I used to fish the Jordan River, and it used to be filled with big fish. Those days have been gone for 15 years. I used to catch, in the springtime, I would catch 17, 20-pound, they were called bouri. It's a local fish, not that tasty, and tasting and very feisty. They're all gone. And, well, I also, in 1994, I interviewed the Israeli negotiator for the water section of the Oslo Accord. And what he told me was shocking. He said, it's all going to dry up. He said, they're asking me to make up dream water. anything to get this deal through. Now, we've discussed that, but I left that meeting. I mean, I got him to say things he never said to anybody. He said, within 20 years...
Hold that thought. Go right ahead.
Okay.
He said within 20 years...
He said it's going to be unsalvageable.
All right, now I think what you're basically saying is that Israel had made an agreement with the Jordanians in return for peace. They were going to give a certain number of acre-feet of water to the Jordanians every year, but they were going to give out more than they actually were being replenished. And as a result, in 20 years, why the Sea of Galilee would be drying up, as would the Jordan River. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but the Jordan by next year will be dry, according to this report. It's just going to be a rocky little pathway. Their report says that next year, because, believe it or not, Jordan and Israel signed an agreement to build two water treatment plants that will go into operation in 2011 because the Jordan River is essentially sewage. I hear the music.
All right, fine. Now, these are going to be water purification plants for the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River?
No, just the Jordan.
I see, okay. All right, fine. Well, there must be some water there if they're going to have a water treatment plant. They're not going to put all that money into a water treatment plant.
Yeah, the water that flows into the lower Jordan.
I see, okay. Well, now, wait a minute. Is there an upper and lower? Is there a Jordan that runs into the Galilee? Is that it?
Well, the Jordan is divided into two.
Right.
You have the Jordan that flows into the north, into the Sea of Galilee, and then you have the Jordan that flows out of the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shavage. Okay, now which one is going to be dried? The lower or the upper
the lower,
one?
Of course.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
The Jordanians don't have access to the upper. The lower runs for about 100 miles from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea. And, well, you've got three people now claiming it. You've got Israel and Jordan, as you always have. And then suddenly you've got the Palestinian Authority, who also want the Jordan River, and I have no idea, except for the tourist industry, I don't know what they could get out of it. But the way it stands now is that there is a pipe. There's a dam on the lower Jordan, an Israeli dam, and it used to release water when it had water that filled the Jordan going down to the Dead Sea. Now, ever since 94 in the peace agreement, Israel has been forced to give Jordan 55 million cubic meters of water, which is every year that's what it loses. So it's taken water that was supposed to go down to the Dead Sea and handed it over to Jordan. Now the problem is that the water that remained was sewage water and agricultural runoff. And that's from both sides of the Jordan, too. It's not as if Jordan doesn't have farms along the Jordan Valley. So they both came to an agreement that the year 2011, no more wastewater would enter the lower Jordan, that they would both treat the water. The only problem is once you have treated water, you don't throw it back into the river. You use it for agriculture, for growing, for irrigation. Treated water is very expensive. And both sides have decided that once their wastewater becomes treated water, they're not going to throw it into the... It's a waste. I mean, why throw treated water back into the river? And both sides in the year 2011 will be using the treated water for irrigation. Now, I assume you know what treated water is. It's just sewage that's no longer toxic.
Right. And, of course, what's that going to do to the Dead Sea?
Oh, it is disappearing. This report does mentioned the here are the details. This is kind of boring details, but let's live with it. Jordan, Israel, and Syria. Don't forget the Syria.
Hold the thought there. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is talking about this report that we're going to see drying up of the Jordan River, of the area above the dam. Of course, they're going to take that water, they're going to treat it, then they're going to use it either for consumption or for irrigation. But there's not going to be water in the Jordan, lower part of the Jordan River. The Dead Sea is drying up, and so basically there is a report, and Barry, go over that report, talking about obviously Israel, Syria, and Jordan, and their
let's
claims.
Not forget Syria. Syria have... all kinds of Syria right now is building this wall, this defensive wall in Lebanon, 20 miles long to stop Israeli tanks, but that puts them for the first time in charge of the Lebanese waters that go down to the Jordan River. And they're out of the picture. I mean, they're not going to negotiate with Israel over anything. So you've got Syria with also Lebanese water. I mean, they've got the whole upper Jordan there now. They've got Syria, Jordan, and Israel are diverting 98% of the Jordan River waters. Now, these are drying numbers, but live with it. Only 20 to 30 million cubic meters of water now flow into the Jordan River. In the olden days, before... but I'd say the 30s were the last time the river flowed the way it's supposed to. You had 1.3 billion cubic meters. And by the way, when I used to fish the Jordan River, and that, I'm talking, let's say, 20 years ago, there were rapids there. I would throw my lure into fast-running rapids. It was, don't forget, it's falling from 100 feet below sea level to the Dead Sea, which is almost 1,400 feet below sea level. That's a big drop. And the river flowed, and it was just, well, it was a white water river. That's all gone. I mean, today they're gone. I'll tell you something else. 20 years ago, when I used to fish that river, it was filled with animals. Otters were everywhere. But there were also all these crustaceans, crabs, all over, crawfish. They're all gone. All of them are gone. It's a tragedy, but it's just not a publicized tragedy. Now, what you've got in the lower Jordan is no longer rapids. If you're lucky, it's only a trickle, but you used to have beautiful vegetation, willows. I mean, the Jordan was one of the world's beautiful rivers at one time. Today it's sewage. Now, both Jordan and the Israelis dump their sewage directly into the Jordan River. Now, this is mixed up with, farm runoff. Both of them farm the area like crazy. But they've also got a natural problem. Israel, flowing into the Sea of Galilee are these salt water springs. This is what fills up the Dead Sea, as a matter of fact. The difference, of course, is that the Sea of Galilee had all these rivers that diluted the salt water. So what Israel did, it was one of the tricks, by the way, for getting 55 million cubic meters of water to Jordan. They used to mix the salt water stream with fresh water, and it's still drinkable, but it's a little bit of cheating. Nonetheless, that's also being dumped into the Jordan now. So when you go to the lower Jordan, what you get is basic sewage mixed with salt. Now, let's talk about what the cures are and what's really going on. Now, the cure, which is so typical, the report says that Israel has to pump water from the Sea of Galilee back into the Jordan. In addition, by the way, to the treated wastewater, the idea is to get a third of the volume that once flowed there back into the Jordan. Now, Israel can't release water from the Sea of Galilee because the Sea of Galilee will turn into the Dead Sea if they put in a third of the water. Remember, 1.3 billion cubic meters was once the Jordan flow. You're talking about 400 cubic meters. Israel doesn't have 1 cubic meter of spare water from the Sea of Galilee. So that solution is absolutely ridiculous. But that's one of the solutions for getting the Jordan to return. And I just view it as a non-starter. You're going to need Syria, Jordan, and Israel to dump all kinds of treated water back into the Jordan and not depend on the Sea of Galilee anymore. That place is on the verge of extinction right now. Now, you also have to remember that the Jordan River is a major tourist, well, it's a baptismal site. Now, both Jordan and Israel have baptismal sites, and both claim that they're straight from the Bible, and that's exactly where John the Baptist baptized Jesus and so forth. Now, Israel has mostly moved its baptismal site from the lower Jordan to the other side, a place called Yardanit. If you've ever been to the Sea of Galilee, you cross into Tiberias, you cross a bridge. That's where the turn left, there's Yardanit, and that's where the baptisms take place. And there the water is deep and clean. Now, the Jordanians, on the other hand, well, their side of the river is not clean. And, well, they have a place in the lower Jordan River where hundreds of thousands of pilgrims get baptized. I believe the figure's that high. I know on the Israeli side of the exact same place, on the lower Jordan, it's all blocked off and it's a minefield, but still 30,000 pilgrims get baptized there a year. They're getting baptized into raw sewage. And, by the way, they get sick. Their tonsils and their adenoids and all kinds of things go wrong when you get baptized in raw sewage. But this is what's going on. The lower Jordan is completely what's left of it. I add, what's left of it is just filthy. And still you've got hundreds of thousands between Israel and Jordan every year actually dunking themselves in this foul water. Next year, according to this report, there's not going to even, you can walk across the place. It'll be ankle deep in some places. The Jordan, and again, I know the Jordan, I used to swim in it and stand up in it. In the middle, it's 6-7 feet deep. It'll be ankle deep if you're lucky. You won't be able to do a baptism unless you do it on your belly. By next year, once they divert the water into freshwater treatment plants, there's nowhere Jordan. That's what this report says. Now, you asked about the Dead Sea. Yes, the Dead Sea has lost 30% of its water in the last 50 years. Once the rest of the Jordan is just cut off, they expect to lose one-third of its volume within a decade. And again, if you walk along the Dead Sea, I don't know if you have. I have many times.
I have as well.
Well, you better have a guide with you because there are sinkholes. Now, I remember the Dead Sea when it was filled. 35 years ago I went there. It was a full lake. Now the hotels, you actually have to take a truck from the hotel to the water. In fact, the southern Dead Sea is all pumped in. It disappeared ages ago. And the hotels that used to be on the water, you'd go from your room, you'd be in the water in, oh, what can you say, 10 yards. Now it's a half a mile to the shore. down a hastily built boardwalk. The Dead Sea is shrinking. We all know about that. But they say next year is going to be the year when the Lower Jordan dries up. That's it. There's no more Lower Jordan. It's gone. Once these two treatment facilities go into action, the Jordan River disappears.
So, is there a solution?
A solution?
Yep.
No.
Okay, there's no solution then.
Well, unless you change human nature and get people to talk to each other. And look, the political situation is very much responsible for the ecological situation. You've got, well, let's just even it out. Syria is going to have access to just about all the northern streams that flowed into the Jordan River, and it's not talking to Israel, and it's certainly not going to enter into a cooperative agreement over the health of the Jordan River with Israel. Jordan wants as much water as it can get from Israel, and the Israeli peacemaking government has handed them all the spare water that exists in the Sea of Galilee. You know, it's a human thing as well. Oh, I hear the music.
Well, Sydney, I don't think the Israeli government has really looked into the future and see what the terrible problems they're going to get. Desperate for peace, they made some very, very foolish agreements that I said they're going to have a profound impact upon the Sea of Galilee, upon that whole amazing area. And the Israel that we've known, that you grew up in, I know that you love, Barry, is just not going to exist. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Barry Shamish as we evaluate what's going on in Israel today. But dramatic changes are coming, and the question is, what does the future hold? We'll be right back. Well, Barry, go right ahead.
Well, just so you know,
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey Water Filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
There's been putting out information on oil in Israel for a long time. It's certainly a stock scam, but certainly there may be some natural gas. But whether there's enough there to make exploration worthwhile remains to be seen. So pick up the rest of the story, Barry. Right. I didn't mean to get you off the subject.
Right. That subject is, let it come into its own weight someday, and we'll discuss it at length. The next has... Well, it's certainly going to come of its own weight, and that is a study done. Well, it's called the Taub Center for Social Policy Studies. It's run by a Tel Aviv University professor, Dan Ben-David. Now, he's just saying that what we all know, and what anyone who's lived in Israel knows. Now, what we hear about Israel's economy is it's booming, that it's a miracle, and all this stuff. That, of course, is propaganda. To an Israeli, it's far from booming, and it's no miracle. But, again, at the global level, you don't have a Greek, Portuguese, Spanish situation where the country is in deep debt. Nonetheless, the level of living in Israel is very, very difficult. Now, again, I'm gonna quote the study, and I will add some comments, but everyone in Israel knows this. Now, according to Ben David, 1 in 5 Israeli men in the working ages are not part of the labor force. And in fact, it's much worse than that. Officially, Israel's unemployment is around 8%. But it doesn't include the disenfranchised men. Now, in America, a disenfranchised man has given up going on the unemployment list and simply is not recorded. Now, using true unemployment, America really is around 20%. It's much higher than, it's double what the official number is. You've got 10% officially in America. It's at least 20%. But in Israel, the figure of true blue unemployment is incredible. 27% of Arab men, according to this study again, but more important, 65% of the ultra-Orthodox Jews don't work. 65%. Now, the reason for this is around 1970, the Israeli government decided to subsidize men for staying in school, essentially, in seminaries, yeshivot. And they get a little salary for, well, bringing their brown lunch bag to the yeshiva and staying there all day and learning the intricacies of the Torah and so forth, but they're not producing anything in the country. Now the figure of 65%, again, the ultra-Orthodox, which are the Haredim, it's for people who don't use that term, they're the black-coated Jews, well, who are highly, highly religious. Now, the Arabs, the high rate of Arabs is because they just have more trouble getting work than Jews, and they get discouraged. But the ultra-Orthodox is voluntary. They don't work because they're being paid, and not very much, let me tell you, but they're being paid to stay in school for the rest of their lives. And their families, which, again, don't have enough money, with their husband getting a stipend for learning until he, well, literally until he dies, they go on welfare. Oh, I hear the music.
Well, that's really, of course, a very foolish thing. You get what you subsidize. You subsidize people not to work. They don't work. And certainly, but this has to be paid for some way with taxes or debt or something else. And this can get into real troubles just like we're having here. But it sounds like they're even going to have a worse problem over in Israel than we have. Would that be a fair thing to...
65% of the ultra-Orthodox are learning in the yeshivot and they're not working.
Right.
And we'll tell you what that means right after the music ends.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish. We're talking about Israel's economy. Is it really booming? Is it really looking good? Or is that simply propaganda? Barry, go right ahead.
Well, here are the figures, and we'll talk about the reaction to this study, which is pretty widespread in Israel. Frankly, they don't want to hear truth. This is the worst problem I've had, and I'll talk about that shortly. With the religious, they're beyond naive. They simply cannot take what's being done to them. But let's talk about the basic facts. Today, Israel's Arabs and ultra-Orthodox make up a little less than 30% of the population. About 15% Arab, about 15% ultra-Orthodox. But half of school-age children are either Arab or ultra-Orthodox because both have large families. That means in one generation, some 25 years, when all the children grow up and have their families, 78% of the Israeli population won't be working. That's the figure the study gives. That if recent demographic... Well, look, it's really simple mathematics. The ultra-Orthodox have very large families. They're the only Jews who do anymore. And for that reason, you have to be kind of grateful for them. If it wasn't for them, the Arabs would overwhelm us, because they also have large families. So there's a check and balance going on between the Arabs and the ultra-Orthodox, keeping the population of Israel equally Jewish. It doesn't go down very much, but they're going to grow up. And right now, in Israeli classrooms, half the children are Arab or ultra-Orthodox. When they graduate and have their own children, 78% of Israelis are not going to be working. And that is the reason, if the government didn't subsidize the Jews to continue religious study, that wouldn't be a problem. But that's not going away because of the political system in Israel, where the ultra-Orthodox blackmail the governments to get the yeshivas funded. And, look, I've got reactions.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shemesh. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and Zitney Berry is talking about the fact that both the ultra-Orthodox and the Arabs have large families, and about certainly a significant part of the Arabs are not working, and a significant part of the, well, all the ultra-Orthodox aren't working, and they calculate that a generation from now, why, of course, if things continue as they are, about well over 70%. Of the Israeli population will not be employed. But pick the story up from there.
Well, you would think that this could be solved. Again, if your family isn't being fed, then you learn a trade and you go to work. I mean, but if you have money coming in for studying, well, you don't need to. You got to cut off the subsidies for grown men to stay in school, no matter how bad they are, by the way. I mean, the worst students you ever saw are staying in school, and a very, very few rise to the position of rabbis. The rest are their students. And you're talking about 65-year-old men who are brown bagging it to the yeshiva for like 800 shekels a month. That really has to stop. I mean, just straightforward. The only solution there is to force them to work by cutting off their subsidies, which, by the way, this report is not at all sanguine about that possibility. As for the Arabs, well, one way or another, you've got to get... look, I'm going to tell you a little story briefly about trying to get the Arabs into the Israeli workforce. I had a call today from my friend Tova in Jerusalem. She has been going to the same healthcare clinic for like 50 years, and the nurses were always Jewish nurses, and, you know, she's a religious woman. She wants a Jewish woman. She doesn't even want a man to touch her. And she says that Arab women are now the nurses. And she went in and she asked the head nurse, are you a trained nurse? And she says, I'm trained in laboratory, I'm a laboratory technician. And she went to the nurses, the Jewish nurses, said, what's going on? A lab technician is your chief nurse. And they told her, what can we do? It's a policy now. They're bringing Arabs and replacing Jews, and there's nothing much we can do about it. This is under-the-table personal information. Jerusalem is being taken over on purpose through diplomatic and political pressure. Jerusalem is becoming far, far more Arab than it ever was before. Now, the plus side to that is, well, that's one way to get Arabs into the workforce, force them in there. The minus side is this is not what certainly the religious community of Israel wants at all. I'm just throwing that in as a personal observation. But back to the report. I'm looking at the reactions to it. Tel Aviv mayor calls the ultra-Orthodox community. Here's his quote. They are endangering the economic strength of the silent majority. Others call them parasites. But others, and this is the effect that is very, very real. Others are moving away from Israel. Last year, it's been steady between 31 and 35,000 Israelis a year leave the country because the economy, is so unreasonable. And the taxes they pay and the city taxes for a lot of people who aren't working, it's really falling hard on the people who are. And for every 3,000 Americans less, about 2,900 Americans went to Israel last year, about 30,000 Israelis moved to America. And again, this subject is just not brought up. They talk about Aliyah, moving to Israel. The numbers are 10 to 1 in favor of immigration from Israel to America over immigration of American Jews to Israel. 10 to 1.
Well, we certainly don't hear about that. You know, all we hear about is all the people going to Israel who want to stand together with their fellow countrymen in the difficult times that lie ahead. But I think it's very logical people would leave because of the political uncertainty and because of the economic suffering, the hard times that they're having.
It's almost all economic. People don't run from war. And again, I lived that life. My son is in the army now. He's got a position he's happy with. My daughter goes in 4 months. They don't even have a thought about leaving Israel. And that may force me back there someday. I'm terrified at the thought, but someday they may get married. I don't want to miss their weddings and so forth. But they don't run from war. They run from a lousy economy.
Well, do you think it's going to pick up again, or is it simply the way
it never picked up? It was never good.
All right.
There's nothing to pick up from. But the point is, the part of the economy that works, well, it should make for a decent standard of living, but the country is being drawn down by a problem that is getting worse and worse by the year, and by, as I said in this report, one generation, that's all it takes for all these students in school to grow up, have their own children. And, well, I'm going to give you a quote from the report. It's actually quite a shocking quote about the result of this. What he says is it's going to doom Israel. I'm not going to go through the report, but he says Israel can't survive this. And that's what this latest report on the economy. But we all knew that. But now the figures are in front of our eyes, and they're really, again, very tough to overcome. Look, again, we were talking about Jerusalem and the policy that's making the city very Arab. Now, I'm going to give you an example of where politics is assuring real trouble in Jerusalem coming up. The Israeli Minister for Public Security, his name is Yitzhak Aronovich, you don't need to know that. Nonetheless, he issued instructions to Israel police to demolish illegal Arab houses, and there are thousands of them. They have no fear whatsoever about building on land that doesn't belong to them, about adding second and third stories. Nobody comes to stop them. Meanwhile, Israelis are under tremendous sanctions from the American government. Nowhere else. There's no other address. Not to build at all. So Jerusalem is becoming much more Arab, very illegally, and the Jews there have to move out because there's no housing going up for them. And this is policy. Now, Aronovich announced that the police will take care of the illegal building in Jerusalem, 5 days ago. Big deal. It was this week. And what happens? Well, the American State Department demands a clarification of this policy. And the American State Department goes straight to the Prime Minister, and who knows what the threats were. We weren't in the room. We don't have a secret mic, but they must have been really good threats because the Prime Minister's office declared that the delays in the demolishing of illegal Arab buildings in Jerusalem will be delayed. So this is U.S. State Department policy absolutely driving Israel from being a normal government of its own people to being a State Department adjunct. Now, the irony in this is that in Gaza this week, the Hamas demolished, well, in the town of Rafah, that's in the southern Gaza, along the Egyptian border. They came in wielding nightsticks, smashing the residents, forcing them out. The number of houses was about 40. The number of residents was about 250. And in came the bulldozers, and they knocked down the houses.
Now, were these Arab, these places where Arabs were living, or Jews?
Of course, what Jews? There's no Jews in
there. Well, I didn't think there was. So why are they destroying the homes of the Arabs?
I have a theory that it has to do with running tunnels from Egypt, and either Hamas wants to take over the business that these people were running from their houses, or I doubt this, but under international pressure, they destroyed the tunnels, tunnel houses, whatever. The people were not given 10 minutes to clean out their houses. In came the police, swinging their clubs, ordering them outside. In came the bulldozers. Within a couple of hours, you had 40 houses destroyed in Gaza this week. Israel has thousands of illegal structures to deal with in Jerusalem, and not an Arab village, not a house built by an Arab illegally can be touched, because the U.S. State Department has ordered the Israeli government to let them build illegally. As for Jews, of course, no buildings. This is policy.
Well, I think we can see whose side the U.S. State Department is on.
Oh, it gets worse. I mean, this was such a, you know, all anyone has to do is see that the Israeli government is motivationally opposed to the Israeli religious community and the patriotic community. And this is policy. I've been saying this for the longest time. It's impossible to miss. Now, this was an event that happens every year in Israel, ever since the 67 war, when 71 Israeli soldiers died defending something called Ammunition Hill. It was a nasty battle with the Jordanians. Terrible battle. And every year there's a ceremony honoring the dead soldiers. And in one battle, losing 71 is some battle. Nonetheless, this year, radicals is what one report said. Others said leftists, most of whom were foreigners, surrounded Ammunition Hill and spat and cursed at the family members, the children and grandchildren of the soldiers who had died. Now, as this turned into a riot, but what the attendees, the children and their grandchildren, couldn't believe was that the police did not attempt to remove the rioters. Worse than that, they protected them. They prevented people going from this funeral ceremony from defending themselves. This is policy. This is why, well, it's why I can't live in Israel anymore. There is a policy opposed, well, to the soul of the Jewish people. This had nothing to do with so-called policies of settlement. This had to do with Jews winning a battle in Jerusalem at a very hefty cost in 67 and not being allowed to honor the dead. And this happened this week.
Well, I think that it tells us a great deal about the feelings of the people who really run Israel behind the scenes. So,
why I keep talking about how hopeless and naive the religious and the right-wing community are. You plant infiltrators in them. They do the worst possible damage imaginable to your life. And you call it conspiracy. That's what my friend Tova today said. She was on a bus with some sort of protest from the Women in Green. She's a member of the Women in Green, and every time she mentioned the truth of who's behind this hatred of Israel And the settlers, well, people would just say conspiracy. They would mockingly say conspiracy, and in Hebrew that's for conspiracy. You can't wake them up no matter what is happening. Nothing I do, except for Rabin, which I had to work on for a decade, can change the way these people think. Jews cannot be doing this to Jews. This is the way they think, and don't ask me why.
I fear that in Israel, just as in the United States, the media controls the mind and the outlook and the reality of the Jewish people.
They do not watch the media. They don't have TVs. They don't buy newspapers except their own. It has nothing to do with the media.
You mean you don't have a television over there?
No, the Orthodox.
Oh, I'm not talking about Orthodox. I'm talking about just the average Israeli.
Oh, the average Israeli gets blasted with the media. Well, it's not average. The average Israeli is traditional and religious. But the secular Israelis, which are about 40% of the country, are totally brainwashed by their media. But again, don't say average Israeli. The average Israelis are being suppressed from from their government. That's what it comes down to. Their government, their army, the works. But they're not affected by the media.
Okay, fine. Well, certainly here in the United States, most people do watch television and certainly read the newspapers. And certainly most of them, of course, are certainly not telling the truth. Fortunately, we do have here the Internet. We have alternative radio, shortwave, satellites. So at least we have a small number of people, probably 15 or 20% now, who realize, of course, there's a real problem and begin to understand what it is. But we still are not a majority.
They've turned themselves off. The ultra-Orthodox, only a minority even has computers. The modern Orthodox, they all have computers, and they stay away from the Israeli media and communicate amongst themselves. Arut Sheva is a source of modern Orthodox media, and it's an improvement, but it's far, far from good.
Well, you need to get them listening to American Internet then, because at least it's available over there. And who knows, maybe some of them might even begin to understand what's going on.
They speak Hebrew. They're not going to listen to American Internet.
They speak Hebrew? They don't speak English?
The majority, no.
Okay,
the majority
fine.
Majority speak Hebrew.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with Barry Shamish to wrap up the program. And Israel has many, many serious problems, and... Well, we all have serious problems, but I think they all get back to the same battle that we've been talking about for a long period of time, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Barry, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right, I'm going to do a quick plug.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, I was horrified when I saw the plight of the people in Haiti after the earthquake, but a similar event could happen right here in the United States, and that's why you should call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD, that's 866-404-FOOD, and purchase a supply of his products. Freeze drying is a great way to preserve food. I know because I bought a supply 40 years ago, and when I opened a can recently, the food was as fresh and tasty as when I purchased it. We're living in uncertain times, so if you'd like to have a supply of ground beef, diced beef, chicken, vegetables, or fruit on hand, call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-FOOD, and mention you heard about him right here at Radio Liberty.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. Of course, you can go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, listen to our programs 9 hours a day on the Internet, watch our videos, read our newsletters, and we hope that you'll get the information out. We have another great new site. It's called Videos on the Web. They're YouTube or other things I think are important for you to see. We want to remind you about the Conspiracy Conference. It's going to be held on the 5th and 6th of June. That's a Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be held in Santa Clara. And, of course, the telephone number to call if you're interested in going would be 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844. I'm not going to be speaking this year, but I'll be there. We'll have a table. And so if you come, why, be sure to drop by and say hello. And there are going to be some very interesting speakers. Michael Kaufman's going to be there, and a number of people that we know, people that we think very highly of, certainly people like Len Horowitz will be there, and hope that you'll find it an interesting program. I know I always enjoy going to the Conspiracy Conference, and we have an opportunity to see a lot of old friends there. Well, Sydney, if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. We're carrying a great new book. It's by Jesse Ventura. It's called Americans Conspiracy. American Conspiracy, and Jesse has done an excellent job on this, talking about so many of the very real conspiracies, and he goes into some fascinating information on what happened on September 11th. And even though he won't come out and frankly say that he thinks our government was responsible, he just says there's a lot of information. He tells you we haven't been told the truth, we've been lied to, the government knew the attack was coming, and well, maybe it was an inside job. You'll have to read his book. He handles these issues very, very well. Sometimes you, when you're in a position like his, you can't say exactly what you think. But Jesse Ventura's book, it's a hardcover, which just came out. We've got it, and can't get Jesse to come on the program, but we're going to spend a little time going through the various chapters. He does a good job. American Conspiracy by Jesse Ventura, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Got another great book. It's called A Terrible Mistake. It's a story about the fellow who worked for the military, and they gave him some LSD, and at least we're told he jumped out the window there back in 1953. His name was Frank Olson, only that isn't the true story at all. The true story is really very, very frightening. In fact, one of the two